Welcome back to the Channel 9 live stage here at Microsoft Ignite. My name is Heike Ritter, and I'm joined by one of our top 10 speakers, Paula, again.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
So our topic today is pass the hash mitigation. I think it's one of your favorite topics at the moment.
Well, it's definitely one of my favorites. That's the first thing, and it's one of the most popular ones at the same time.
So can you just introduce yourself a little bit? I know most of the audience, they know you all, but just for maybe some new people.
Well, definitely. So my name is Paula Januszkiewicz, and what I'm doing for a living, I'm a penetration tester. I'm also the owner of the company, it's called Secure. And with our team, we are doing different kinds of security research in the market. Plus, we are, of course, implementing that on our customer side by checking out if their infrastructure is secure enough, what kind of recommendations we can have for them. So it's very much an ongoing subject.
Trying to hack their infrastructure.
We call it researching, you know?
OK, so let's talk about pass-the-hash. So I think many people think pass-the-hash is about stealing certificates, password, but it's actually not. So what is it?
Well, pass-the-hash is the attack that is relying on the hash that you can use for authentication to the local, either remote machine. So normally, typically, we log on with passwords, yes?
OK. But
hash is something unusual. It's, of course, how our password is stored in operating system. And the whole pass-the-hash idea is that you can take this value, which is, of course, one-way shortcut function, and then you are able to take it and authenticate it to different kinds of resources.
OK. So what kind of hashes do we store on the Windows operating system, for instance?
Well, we use in Windows the Microsoft implementation of MD4, and that is pretty much something that we call NT-hash. We used to use something that was called LM-hash, but right now we are using the NT-hashes. And as I mentioned, NT-hash is a small variation on about MD4. And this is the one that is particularly used for authentication. But of course, we use a couple of other ones, yes? We can use MD5 in different solutions, though not that often as MD4. We can use SHA-1 and a couple of higher versions. So there are plenty. But if it's about the passwords itself, we are talking, of course, about something that we are describing as an NT-hash.
And where are they stored?
Well, there are a couple of places, of course, yes. It's a long story, I know. But, well, first of all, they can be stored in some database in the local machine if, of course, machine is not connected to the domain. If you are authenticating within the domain, then they are stored in ntds.dit. So these are like two major places where we are using them for authentication. But of course, whenever we are thinking about authentication, a password and the hash, it's not only SAM or NTDS.dit. There are also a couple of other places. We've got Credman. We've got also something that is called LSA Secrets. And that is pretty much in the registry. It's another story. You can get the password out of that. So there are plenty of places. But this is pretty much it, where the password are, or hashes technically are stored.
OK. So when we look at the pass-the-hash attack, like from let's start with it. So the user, for instance, receives an email with a malware attachment or something. And then, yeah. The attacker gets access, administrative access probably, to the system. So what are the typical scenarios for attackers to really get access? It's not only malware. I think there are different scenarios.
Yeah, of course. So there is one thing that is very important to start from. And to be able to get the user's hash, you need to be a local administrator.
I need to be.
Yes.
So this is required. Okay.
Exactly. So this kind of situation is leveraging like the issue in the companies where the users are having the local administrative privileges, and that is very easily exploitable. It's a big threat in general. And whenever, of course, a user or hacker in this case is the local administrator, these guys can take the hash of the different kinds of accounts. For example, of the account that is currently logged on, or of the local administrator's account.
So but the user or the hash they want to take out of the computer, this user has to be signed in before, so because otherwise there's no hash.
Well, that depends which user we are talking about, yes? Because if we are authenticating to the Active Directory, then hash is there, but it's going to be also in the memory of the currently logged on user. But whenever we are talking about the local workstation, we don't have some database, and this is where we can get the hashes from. It's a typical problem, by the way, in the organizations when we've got the local administrator password being the same on a certain scope.
All the machines.
All the machines, or sometimes the guys are trying to mitigate it in a way, and what they do, they have the different password of the local administrator and workstations, and different one on the servers.
Okay.
But that doesn't really help much, because with the pasty hash, what you are able to do when the password is obviously everywhere the same and the hash is going to be also the same, you are able to crawl from one workstation to another and then try to find out any kind of issues like domain admin, in a worst case, logging on to the user workstation. If that account did log on, then from the memory you were able to export or extract the hash exactly of the next account. And this is how you are able to jump from one computer to another and then gain more and more privileges.
So I think you're already a little one step further. So first we have the malware, right? So
yes, that's where we started.
What's next? So because I think, yeah, maybe getting the malware running on a computer is not that difficult, because we have users, they just click on anything they receive. And as you were saying, many customers really allow users to be local administrator to perform tasks like installing drivers or software, something they need. So sometimes that's required.
Yeah, sometimes it's just about the convenience, yes?
Yes. Then what is the next step? So because I think you maybe need some tools, or what are you using for that?
Yeah, so the first thing is this local administrator thing. Yeah? So when the user opens an attachment, which could be the case, of course, or could download some software, install software from the website,
yep,
open the different kinds of portable apps that underneath, during the start, they require the elevation. And then just because user clicked yes, and user was capable to do that, then we became the local administrator. And from there, of course, we can start the whole party. But to be able to get there, it requires some kind of activity. So this is something that I mean, maybe it's not the nice name for that, but I call it a kind of cheap style of hacking, because it's relying on the users or employees. We call it that in IT industry, we call them users, right? But for real, employees. Kind of lack of awareness in security, yes? They don't have to be the best, but at least they should know that a couple of things like that, that incoming emails or software that they download from their website, it's not necessarily trustworthy.
That's true.
Yeah. So when they click on that, and
yeah,
then the hacker gets elevated to the local administrative privileges, then you can use your tools to be able to get the hashes out of the computer. And to write a tool like that, it's not really a big deal.
So what is one of the tools, for instance? So I think one very popular tool is Mimikatz.
Well, Mimikatz is definitely one of the most popular tools. Benjamin is Benjamin Delpe is the author of Mimikatz. He's an amazingly smart guy. But there are also, of course, for that activity, there are also many different kinds of tools. We are actually using for that activity our own tool.
Okay, yes, we were saying there are many tools out there and they are well known. So why can't they be protected with a malware scanner or like, yeah?
Everything you know comes with time. Because, for example, our tool, and I'm on my sessions that we're probably going to talk about later, I'm publishing always the link to download the tools. So I'm actually sharing this tool. Yeah. But, you know, it's good and bad. Well, first of all, maybe the bad thing. The bad thing is the tool is not very positive, yes, because it extracts caches from the local workstation. It extracts also the cache credentials, and it does also a couple of other things. Okay, this is bad, but if we make it public, think about it, it's going to go to the different kinds of antivirus solutions, and next time someone would like to use it, it's going to be already recognized by antivirus. If we are the ones, a couple of other people just holding it and not sharing with anyone, then that tool will definitely run.
And I think with Mimikatz is you can create your own version out of it, and it has a different hash, so it won't be recognized by malware solutions, or is this
Yeah, well, it's not that easy, but it's not that difficult at the same time to build your own version. So technically, when you've got the sources, you can recompile it, and then you can completely change it. Or if you don't, you can try to wrap it into the different kinds of loaders that whenever, of course, you're going to execute this code on a certain computer, it's going to technically run from the memory, and it will not be recognized by antivirus. It's a pretty much long story. But to build the tools like this, to wrap them into your own packages, and to make them not recognize my antivirus, it's not the most difficult thing to do, really.
Okay. So you already explained. So you have the hash, and then you go from one computer to the next computer until you probably found the administrator of the domain or something.
Yes.
So what should administrators of infrastructures do? So what are some recommendations from you?
There are plenty. First of all, exactly. Do we have 1 hour or something?
No, we need only the top 10 recommendations.
Top
now.
10 only. Okay. So let me wrap it up. Maybe not top 10. Maybe a little bit less. But but let's move on. So one of the most important things, like if we wonder what is the most important thing, it's to prevent running the code that we don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so on the top of everything, like why someone is able to extract the hash? Because someone executed that code on that computer and that was possible. Yeah, so this is the first top level functionality. So solutions like, for example, AppLocker are preventing you from doing that. I'm going to be talking about that on one of my sessions, how to prevent something that is pretty much popular lately, which is called CryptoLocker. And that was killing everyone.
Is the session at Ignite?
Yes, so this is the Thursday session, so tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow morning, 9 a.m.?
Well,
10 a.m.?
Afternoonish.
Yes.
So this is the Hidden Talents one, yes? And I'm going to be talking about that, but regardless, yes? So to execute the code, we need to implement something. And all these solutions that whenever you want to build your own executable on the top of someone's tool, I mean, if you are doing this regularly, this is very easy. It's extremely easy. If you are like starting it, you need to fight with it a little bit. But completely, I mean, everybody is capable of making that. That's why this part is crucial. Then the next part is how we are able to prevent the pasty hash in general. Yes, and then one of the first steps that is actually really nice is to use the different local administrator passwords. If we are talking about spreading all around in between the local credentials, then all the local administrator passwords that can be pretty much different. And there are solutions to manage that. There is actually the one from Microsoft Gallery. It's called the Local Admin Password Management Solution.
Okay.
And what you're able to do, you are able to manage the different admin passwords in the different kinds of workstations, and this is stored as an attribute in Active Directory.
Centralized again, so that means for all my domain computers and all my domain joint computers have different passwords managed by that tool?
Yes.
I should make sure that nobody has access to this computer.
That's exactly the point. But I mean, nobody should have access to domain controller anyway, yes, so we're just making it even more important.
So, does it help to have long passwords, complex passwords, change them regularly? So is this something that can help as well?
Well, a little bit, yes, because pasty hash is something that is happening internally, yes? And whenever the users are especially reusing passwords or whenever they are using them to log on to the external resources and they are not very complex, it's still obviously using the complex password makes sense, yes? Actually, that reminds me, funny thing, I was doing the pen test in one of the customers, and I saw on a parking spot, very nice, a Porsche 911. And I'm like, pretty nice car, yes? I mean, very nice. So then what I did the password cracking, and then one of the passwords was Porsche 911.
of course. Yeah, very easy to find out.
Who this car belongs
to? So now you had the password, you could probably see who was the user and find out who this pretty car belongs to.
Exactly. I mean, that was the I would say, the story of the day, yes, when I was working there. But yes, definitely it makes sense. But there are also a couple of other mitigations, yes, where what we can implement on the top of the company level. There is a mechanism, it's called Authentication Assurance Mechanism, and that particular mechanism makes you an administrator only in a brief word, whenever you log on with the smart card. So whenever you do that, log on with the hash and pass the hash worked, we had bad luck, yeah, pass the hash worked, then you still will not be a member of administrator group. Even though you are, you didn't log on with the smart card, that removes you this privilege to become the local administrator.
Okay, but that also means already we are talking about multi-factor authentication, so
yes,
that helps a lot, right? So
it does.
Because if I have the hash, it won't authenticate me because I need something else that proves my identity.
Yeah, though there are some bad news because whenever you log on with the smart card, it works pretty much the same.
Okay.
Because from the operating system perspective, it's seen as a hash as well. Yes, so you need to have a couple of things implemented, and some mitigation solution and authentication assurance mechanism is pretty much what is needed here.
Okay, but if I say I need something like the hardware, the device itself, to let me access some resources somewhere, so that means I need the hash plus my, I don't know, phone or something?
Yeah, phone of course makes sense. Yes,
okay.
Something temporary. Yes,
okay.
Definitely.
One-time
yes.
Passwords and
that kind of things. Yes, definitely.
Okay.
Yes.
What about biometrics to really sign onto the machine?
Yeah, so that depends really on the implementation, but it's a pretty much a similar case.
Same,
to the
you have the hash again.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's talk about our implementations in Windows 10 because I think we are addressing this issue past the hash. By storing the hashes and the ELSAs in a virtualized environment.
Yes, VSM.
VSM.
Yeah.
Can you explain us a little bit what this implementation is?
VSM is it's new in Windows 10. And I mean, since PastiHash was so popular, Microsoft, and I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying in Microsoft words, but Microsoft decided to implement a solution to mitigate that. And that was needed, of course, we know that. And one of the steps to pretty much do was to put the different kinds of user credentials, different kinds of user tokens used for authentication in the place that can be only accessed under the certain conditions. Because normally all the tokens, credentials, they were stored in something that is called LSA, Local Security Authority SS subsystem. That means that it's just a process that is running as a local system in an operating system.
Protected by a software that was...
Exactly. Yeah. So it's in your session, and if you are a local administrator, you can right-click on it, make a memory dump, and then you are able to analyze it later on with the debugger, Mimikatz, or any tools like that. And that allowed you, of course, to get access to different kinds of so-called LSA secrets. So the idea, of course, is to move all those secrets to the separated kind of mini type of operating system that is pretty much capable to run LSA in its own environment and separate it. It's a little bit like a virtual TPM thing, and separated from the operating system perspective. So even though you get access to the operating system,
compromise the kernel or something, so the kernel
you are not
even
able
has access.
Exactly, to access that particular piece of code.
Okay, so you need Windows 10 for that?
Yes, you need Windows 10 for that, and until you're going to implement Windows 10, it's going to probably, in the enterprise, it's going to take a little bit of time.
Okay.
So we need to figure out and still think about different kinds of other mitigations. But that is actually very, very good news with the Windows 10.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Things like that finally came.
So I think there's a session here at Ignite as well. I think Chris Hallam is doing it about exactly this new technology. And so have a look at the session catalog to find out what session it is. I don't know it out of my mind now, but yeah. Let's talk about your sessions.
Yes.
You have four this year here at Ignite.
Yeah.
Yeah, congrats again.
Thank you. It's a lot of work, you know.
Yes, I know. Two are tomorrow and two are on Friday.
Yeah.
What are the topics? So are they all the same or all different? So what is the audience that should come to your sessions?
Gotcha. So first session just before 11, it's the session about hardening ideas in the infrastructure. It's not like a direct list what we can do to harden our operating system. It's more about discussion about the scopes where the hardening can be put in place and why. And I'm going to show, of course, all the different kinds of, well, hacking, not hacking, demonstrations, what can we do better. So it's more like a positive session. The next one is more negative because it's about hidden talent. So this is about employees.
So you're always playing the good and the bad girl, right?
I try to, on the Microsoft conference, be the good one. So the users one is actually pretty interesting because we've got like users, and we have limited users to be users. They are no longer local admins, and that's great. But it comes the question, I mean, if we do have a user being a regular user, what kind of danger we can expect from them? Like, can the user, for example, hack your infrastructure? Can the user, simply speaking, bringing the CryptoLocker case to the field, just click a simple piece of code, and you don't have to be an admin to be able to encrypt your data. Yeah, so the user does this, and then user also causes the encryption on all of the servers that the user had access to. So that's pretty nasty, yes? So the question is, what kind of stuff users can do? And the more important question here is, can we afford, obviously, users doing that? And the next stuff, how do we prevent that? So that's one of the
I think that's a
ideas.
Very, very good question, because I think in one of your many, many webcasts you're doing, you're saying the user should not be the cause of a pass the hash mitigation. Like, he should not be the one who get blamed for it. So you have administrators. They are doing their business, and they should really prevent the user from running those kind of malware.
Completely. I mean, I really don't like everybody's complaining on users, right?
Yeah. You're doing it all the time now.
I'm doing it all the time as well. But at the end, we shouldn't, yes? Because they are not specialists.
No.
So whenever you got this
specialists
email.
Specialists in something else. They're marketing specialists.
Completely.
They're finance specialists.
So when you got an email like, oh, you got a message on a Dropbox, click here to open it, it doesn't sound very malicious, yes? So they're going to click on it, they're going to open the message, and then the problem is ready, yes?
Yeah.
So what was always my point, and I'm always a deep believer in that, is that with the current technology that we have, we should not be able to, exactly blame users, and we should be able to implement all the different kinds of mitigations so that users with their level of security education, which, as we mentioned, doesn't have to be good, will prevent them.
Yeah.
Will prevent that things to happen.
Because we have the tools to manage the clients and to really lock them down to a certain level. I think that's different if you talk about private users. They're at home, they receive an email from their bank, and but there are no things hackers really want on this computer, so.
Yeah, it's a little bit different story with the personal computers. But do you know, it's actually quite interesting. Like, we've got an app blocker that I've mentioned, and it's very good technology. Because it prevents, obviously, the processes from running, and not only executables from running, and not only that, but you can, for example, specify which kind of MSIs, which kind of scripts, which kind of DLLs you would like to load in an operating system.
It's by hashes as well, so if someone would change it, it won't run.
Exactly, yes. And if someone's going to inject something in a code, or whatever, a lot of things, a lot of mitigations are implemented. Do you know how unpopular is that?
I know. It's ridiculous. So, but I think it's because doing it this way only specify which application or like what can run is very complicated. It's a long list instead of doing it the other way. So some are just blocking applications from running, but that doesn't really help. So
that doesn't. Yeah,
you
we
don't
have
want
to
them to run a game. Okay, that's nice, but it won't help you to protect your system.
Definitely.
So I think I probably think there will be a list out there. So what kind of processes really need to run? Suggestions on how to configure App Blocker?
Yes, you have to whitelist your applications, obviously, and whenever you are implementing that, there is an audit mode, which helps. Yes, because then you can review all the logs, subscribe to them, and then you will be able to technically read all the different kinds of apps that users are running, and at the end we'll be good to go to implement that. But you know, it takes time. That's why.
That's true. So I just saw a question here. So Anthony is asking: is Windows 10 more secure than open Linux platforms?
It's a very interesting question, you know. I mean, it's hard to evaluate, like, yes, no, yes, because everywhere there is a solution. I'm in the middle always, and I'm trying to evaluate each solution from the kind of trying to objective perspective. Open platforms, just because they are open, it doesn't mean that they are more secure, yes? In a lot of different kinds of cases, and we know them in the history not really a long time ago, we are able to find out different kinds of vulnerabilities, even though the code is open. The question is, who reviews it? Mm. Where is the quality? Yes. So
reduce it and who fixes?
Exactly, at the end. On the other hand, we've got Windows operating system that is also written by people, yes? So, but there are also checks in a code, bugs happen, and that's natural to a process of security and code and so on.
I think we are responsible to fix it, so I don't know how it is with an open platform, so nobody is really responsible for fixing issues?
Well, at the end, that depends really on the type of operating system, yes? But at the end, I mean, what matters is over a certain good and well said, well done security level, we really should decide on a comfort, yes, and what is appropriate for business. So maybe the Linux open platform, if we consider them, well, within our conditions, that it's a secure operating system, we secured it properly, then it's good for business, we are good to go. The same version, this is the same story, it's pretty much with Windows, yes? In Windows 10, though, there's a lot of very good mitigations implemented. So it's not only competitive, it's actually one step ahead, one step forward, I mean, so that all the other guys need to pretty much follow Windows 10 right now.
Right now, okay. Good, so I think we talked about two of your sessions only, right?
Yes.
The Thursday one. So, let's talk about the Friday's one, but before you start, so if you want to send us some questions, use the Twitter hash MSIgniteCH9. So we have a few more minutes to go, so if you're fast, we can probably ask Paula the question you have for her, but let's talk about your sessions.
Yeah, the sessions. So two other ones on Friday that I'm having. One is the memory analysis, and it's actually my favorite because it's very grateful. It's very deep dive. I mean, it's just a deep dive, yes?
You're
to
crazy.
The memory. And thanks. Thank you. That's a compliment.
Yeah, take it as a compliment.
Thank you so much. But yeah, so this is the one, yes. And then the next one is related to, cryptography. I call it Adventures in Underland. And it's a session about what kind of information is stored on a disk. And that is the interesting one.
Yeah, and I think for everyone as well who is interested in PastiHash, you were saying this is a session they can learn not specifically about PastiHash, but about storing what kind of data is stored on the computer and get more information on that.
Exactly. We're going to be talking about data protection API. We're going to be playing with the cache credentials. We're going to be recovering user email without having access to the domain profile within the Active Directory. So data protection API, a lot of encryption.
It's nice that you're calling as we are going to play a little bit.
I need to mentally prepare for it because it's hard for me too because it's a lot of things, yes?
Yes.
A lot of things to mention. And the most important thing is to explain them well because this session is not the easiest one, yes? So in order so everybody can follow, I will need to really try and do my best to explain all the single things that are happening over there. So that's going to be quite challenging.
But you're usually always very good in that. So I know it from earlier sessions and webcasts you did. So I think on your website, secure.pl, is it?
Yes, PL or US.
Mm-hmm. Okay, US. You have a bunch of sessions recorded, links to other platforms where we can see some of your sessions. Of course, TechEd, all the recordings are up there. And probably, I don't know if your session will be streamed tomorrow. If not, you can have a look at the recording later on the next day. So let's summarize. Don't blame the user.
Don't blame the user, definitely.
Configure your infrastructure properly. Use the tools that are available. Built into the system or complemented with Windows Server technologies. And watch your system. So because I think it's also difficult to figure out, oh, have we been compromised or not? So
there was an amazing tool, by the way. It's called Sysmon, yes? There is a new version that came out.
I heard about that.
Yeah. It's very good, and we have actually implemented it in a bunch of customers for as a monitoring platform for what is executing on a different kinds of machines, and very lightweight. Could it be better? Really, I really love it. It's for monitoring whatever executes on the operating system, and whenever you've got a process that tries to, for example, connect to the network. Then you're going to also get that information. What was the IP addresses? What was the parent process? Like full monitoring of what's going on. Very nice.
So, and in case you got compromised, so then there's a huge process, really, right? To make sure or like yeah, to build a new environment with. So what is the usual case? So you have to really rebuild your whole entire domain if someone was able to get your domain admin credentials?
Yeah,
I think that's a long another topic, I know, but
yeah.
Just is it easy to get rid of this attacker out of your, so throw him out of your environment, or is there something else you need to do?
You know, the investigation is always divided into two parts. One, no investigation, and we just wipe all the stuff. Another one, we do the investigation, and then we try to find out if the damage is huge, yes, and we don't have, it's completely against our business to rebuild everything from the scratch. I mean, it's a very uncomfortable situation, so you have to analyze everything very carefully according to your knowledge, if of course, there is nothing left. Mm. And that is, at the end, I don't want to say you never know because it's your operating system, but there are so many things that we can really like do not notice one yeah. tiny thing, and it might be that thing that really stays in our environment. Yeah. So at the end, we can never be sure that we have cleaned it all. So I mean that I mean if our business allows, yes, wiping everything, that would be actually pretty nice.
Okay. And then start really and secure it from.
Sorry,
the
guys,
very
one
beginning.
Week stop of operation. We're stopping it.
Okay, so I think we are over time already. Thank you so much, Paolo, again
so
for
much.
Your time.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, and stay tuned. I think he is coming more, of course, so stay online.